The following program is recorded content created by the Truth Network.
Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Okay, so you saw, if you're on Facebook Live, you're not allowed to say anything. Okay, so you're sworn to secrecy for a minute. So the title of the show today is Back to Blue. All right, so we're going to change subjects. I told you yesterday, we're not going to talk about Afghanistan today. We're not going to talk about COVID today. We're going to talk about something that you care about. We're going to talk about several subjects that you care about. But with a perspective from a friend of mine that is not a common perspective, because this Antoine Thomas is back in the studio today, who's the host of the Real Talk podcast. He's also the grassroots director with a certain organization. But I'm not going to tell you that yet either for all of you on the radio. So here's a gentleman who loves the Lord. Okay, so he's a Christian. He's a police officer. He's been serving in various roles in the police department for 12 years, both at the county level and city level. So he's a conservative. He likes Trump. He is against critical race theory. He's against defunding the police, well, obviously because he is a police officer. A hardcore conservative, a Republican, a Christian. And so now if I were going to ask you another question, what color is his skin? The answer would be white. Right? That would be the assumption.
That would be the assumption.
Antoine, welcome back. How are you?
I'm glad to be here, Steve. Thank you.
It's good to see you. It's good to have you here.
Good to see you as well.
So let's get in the Wayback Machine a little bit. And I'd like to know how you ended up a police officer. Why did you check that line of work? And how did you end up a conservative? Because as we know, speaking plainly, most African-Americans in this country are not police officers. They're certainly not conservatives. They're not Republicans. In the last 50 years, most presidential elections anywhere, 92-93%, for the most part, will vote for the Democrat candidate. Trump changed that a little bit. So you're a bit of an anomaly.
That's right.
So how did that happen?
Well, when you look at the police career, I'm what I like to call a second-generation police officer. My mom's oldest brother was a police officer in Plantation, Florida. But the first episode, actually, of my show was entitled Becoming a Police Officer is a Calling. I believe it's a calling from God. So I was called, chosen for that profession, and I love it near. It's always been in my heart, as I always say. And I just think it's something that is still noble. Like, oh,
yeah, there you go. Steve. Well done.
Oh, wow. You like that?
Were you a little kid and wanted to be a police officer?
I've always wanted to be a police officer. I was that little kid watching police, cops. And I used to play, a little drama role by myself usually.
Yeah.
I was a cop stopping cars on my bicycle. Yeah, so I've always had it in me.
And then once you got in there, what was the experience like? It's one thing to kind of dream about it and think about it, but all of a sudden you are one.
It's everything that I thought it was going to be, and it's everything that I believe God's called me to do, because I believe 90% of this job is talking to folks, and I love to talk to people.
Yeah, yeah.
Educating.
Yeah. Would we call that community policing?
We can call that community policing, and as we like to say, bridging the gap.
Yeah. So as we've watched what's happened in this nation, we've got a lot to talk with Antoine about. He's going to be here for three segments of the show, and again, he's the host of Real Talk, his new podcast, which we're going to talk about. Also a grassroots director with Blexit. That's what I didn't tell you. Blexit, B-L-E-X-I-T, for African-Americans that are leaving kind of the liberal Democrat world. Over the last 2 years, and the defund the police movement, it has been excruciating to watch this. Sure. And there was a poll I saw earlier this year, Antoine, that 80%, they did a poll of 10,000 police officers nationwide. 80% of them said that they would not encourage their children to be police officers because it's changed so much. And we have a lot of multi-generational police out there. But how do you kind of react to what's happened with Americans, and thank God not most of us, but a significant portion of people really turning on the police, the defund the police movement? So it's not just people in the street, it's people in positions of power. But how have you reacted to all that? How's that made you feel?
Well, as I always said, and I've been preaching it more than ever, that I believe that the government folks, I'll just call them on the left, are always using the police as a pun to be able to separate it by race. Because you hear that the white cop is killing the black man at a higher high rate, right? We always say that. So I believe that's what helped fuse the narrative. And of course, me being in this profession, I know and understand that's not true. That's not happening. So I go face it day to day, you know, and my whole goal is to make it back home safely, of course.
Yeah.
But my whole goal, especially when, if I'm standing inside of a convenience store having a cup of coffee, whatever it may be, I have certain looks. I always talk to that person that's looking at me kind of odd because they just see me as a cop. They haven't even had the opportunity to meet me. And once they see how a jokester, a friendly guy I am, and of course an open guy, that starts another dynamic. So I believe it's just, again, what I said earlier, getting the public educated.
How do you think that we've gotten to the point where there's a significant number of people in this country, including mayors, city council members, and otherwise, that actually think it's a good idea to start drawing back on funding for the police? How the heck did we get there?
Well, we saw that definitely with the George and the Chauvin incident, but that's just always been something they've been trying to push, but it hasn't been able to sell. So what happened last year, that was a selling point that Chauvin went in to commit murder on a black person. He found one, which wasn't true, right?
Yeah.
He didn't go seeking. But at the end of the day, that was going to help fuel the narrative, the narrative, because my people, as I like to say, my black people, were already kind of in an uproar over the years that we've seen officer-involved deaths.
Sure.
Right. So that just really sealed the deal, as I like to call it, or as Stevie Wonder said it best, signed, sealed, and delivered.
Right, no kidding. But a lot of polling will show that some of the people that are most against defunding the police are black folks that live in urban settings.
That's right.
Because you see how bad it is with a significant police force. You start pulling them out, you start drawing down.
That's right.
We know human nature as Christians. It's only going to get worse.
It's going to get worse.
Has it been mind-boggling to you, frustrating, maddening, and enraging to see liberals go down this road?
Well, it has been, but we, in my mind, always knew it was going to turn around again because it's like a boomerang when you throw it out there. It's coming back because it's never going to work. It's never going to work because police were created for that purpose.
Right.
I even talked about it on the podcast on how policing started. In the England days, okay, colonial days, when you look at the night watch, mm-hmm. and when they were called in to protect property. Now, of course, we protect people and property, but at the end of the day, you have to have that existence, and police has to be on earth because we have people that are trying to take over.
Yes, our theology informs our community understanding of what the why we have to have police. But it has been interesting to talk about the boomerang. We're coming up on a break. Like even in Minneapolis, even in Portland,
right,
where they go, yeah, defund the police. Then the natural thing happens. Crime gets worse. Crime is just skyrocketing all across America, especially in our major cities. And now they're quietly but surely saying, okay, we need to get some police officers back. I do have a question when we come back. Is there too much water that's been under the bridge? Because now I think you're going to have a harder time getting police officers, people that want to come into that. Why would you want to go into a profession where you got a good chunk of the country that distrusts you and hates you?
Right.
And you want to put your life on the line for them? That's a difficult one. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. I'm not going to talk about COVID today or Afghanistan, but just a friendly reminder to continue to pray for the folks in Afghanistan. It's really bad. Now they're saying anywhere from 10 to 40,000 Americans could be stuck behind enemy lines, which is essentially the perimeter that the Taliban has set up around the airport there in Kabul. And I'm getting some reports from a few friends about people that are stuck and missionaries and interpreters and stuff like that. By the way, I put a link up on Facebook earlier today. I'm a mixed fan of various people. So somebody like Glenn Beck, for example, who I think is one of the most talented people in radio and has and maintains that title for years because he's just such a gifted communicator. He's very, very creative. He's a little confused on the religious side because of his Mormonism, but he does do some great work. So they have this thing called the Nazarene Fund, and he's got people on the ground trying to, they're actually chartering jets, flying into Kabul to rescue Christians. He's been doing this in the Middle East for several years now. And if you want to donate some money, because you should have that nagging feeling, what can I do about this? First of all, pray. And God knows all the details, so you don't have to know everything in order to pray effectively for what's going on in Afghanistan. But that's a place, and I put the links up on my Facebook pages today for the Nazarene Fund. If you give them $50 or $100 or $150 or whatever, every dollar of that's going to go to the effort to get planes into Kabul to get Christians out of there. Okay, so that's one thing that we can be doing besides praying. So don't let that go. And I'll continue to mention that on the air. And then tomorrow on Theology Thursday, I mentioned a great author I spoke to the other day. who wrote an incredible book all about, really, it's all about, where did I put it? Carl Truman. Hold on. This is just the way we work.
I love it.
Walking in the other room. Now I'm coming back. Everybody relax. Take it easy. It's live radio. This is just what happens. The Rise and Triumph of the Modern Self. Self and autonomy. That's the name of the game in the modern world, especially here in America. Carl Truman's brilliant. He grew up and was educated in England. He lives over here now. So we're going to play that interview tomorrow. What's the deal? How do we get to a place where somebody can say, I am a woman trapped in a man's body, and a good chunk of the American populace will say, okay, how do we get there? So it's really a fascinating historical study and a look at what's been going on in our nation and around the world for a long time. But right now we're with Antoine Thomas, the host of Real Talk podcast, which is available on Apple and pretty much anywhere you can get your podcast. So Real Talk with Antoine Thomas, who's also been involved with Blexit for years. Antoine, it's great to have you here. How many states is Blexit in now?
We're in 35.
That's incredible.
Started last year.
That's just crazy. Started last year already in 35 states. So that's wonderful.
Alaska being one of them.
Is it really?
Absolutely.
There's black people in Alaska?
I didn't know that either.
I sound terrible. People probably think I'm just a scumbag press. But believe me, here's the risk you run if you do radio or you're me or you're married to me or you're anywhere near me, is I'm going to tell you what I'm thinking.
Absolutely.
And if I have a question or a comment, I'm just going to spit it out. Now, in this case, with Antoine, my brother in Christ, I can count on the grace in my brother through Christ, and we should extend that to each other.
That's right.
So even when we have disagreements, we should be able to do that in a Christian way. Okay, critical race theory, because I know this is something you're talking about a lot on the Real Talk podcast. And again, it's Antoine Thomas, Real Talk podcast. Critical race theory, I know you have a perspective on this. I think we are resegregating the country.
Yeah.
So what's your thought on critical race theory? Because I know you've been talking about it.
You know, you summed it all up. And the way I added into the Real Talk, because that's centered around police, right?
Yeah.
I actually like to say strictly police. The police are being used for that purpose to help divide. And again, during our break, we talked about the George and the Chauvin incident. So what better profession to use to keep that division? And that's police work. Because I talked about on the show, there is probably, I've never done the polls, but 90% or more are white police officers. Mm-hmm. We're dominated by that. And of course, white male police officers.
Right.
So you look at that profession and then you can kind of dumb it down to say, white men are coming to work, putting the uniform up, you know, on, looking in the mirror, say, I'm going to kill a black person today. That's my goal. Right. Further from the truth, but I think, well, I know this is how the left is able to interject critical race theory. And of course, we know it's at the educational level,
yeah.
But it's moving into the police because it's always been a part. You know, actually, I brought my police chief on the last episode I did, mm-hmm. a black guy, by the way. I said that on the show too, Steve. So we're on the same. I said, wait. By the way, I forgot to tell you he's black. But at the end of the day, I want to hear from a man who has 30 years or more in the business, who's went through it. And in our training, we do have implicit bias training, things like that. But I asked the question, do you see critical race theory training strictly coming into the profession? And he left me with, well, it's sort of already here, but I definitely think it will some way be intertwined.
Yeah, and it's really kind of scary to contemplate the impact of critical race theory as a an operational standard or an operational lens for police officers. Because it just resegregates the country. And if you're black, you're oppressed. You don't have a chance. If you're white, you're an oppressor. You're a jerk. And so that we start teaching the next generation to just categorize themselves and others strictly by skin color. That's going to manifest out on the street, isn't it?
Absolutely.
I mean, we already have enough problems with that. But if we're really trying to cement it through the educational process, it'll be even worse.
That's the goal.
I haven't heard a lot of African Americans, commentators on the left or the right, talking about critical race theory. I hear a few on the right when you get a chance to. But what's been your reaction in just talking to other African Americans, conservative or otherwise, about critical race theory, like in our schools or just a part of our educational process? What's the reaction there?
Oh, they're not buying it. And doing some research, I realized that critical race theory has been out since the 1980s. I mm-hmm. had no idea, right?
Yep.
But when you look at it, people that are on my team, I like to say, they don't buy it. We know it's a false narrative, and it's all to make sure that the kids that are growing up right now have a hatred for white people. And to say that the reason why you're not able to make it in life is because the white man that you never met is holding you down, you know? Have you noticed it's never the white woman? It's always the white man.
Right, yeah, it's not the white woman.
Yeah,
it's the white
always
man.
Noticed that. I mean, obviously we know we're the dominant gender, but at the end of the day, it's never
the thing that you're teaching children, especially in an educational context, especially African-American children or any kids of color, is that what they're going to hear is you don't have a chance.
That's right.
I don't care. I don't care what God has to say about your destiny.
That's right.
I don't care what your work ethic is or your own drive or your own abilities or your own natural talents. None of that matters.
That's right.
Look down. Look at the color of your skin. That determines the outcome.
That's right.
That's not only evil. That's unloving.
It's unloving. And when you tell someone that at a very small age, they're going to grow up to know that I'm a failure and there's no need to try because I'm already, when I walk out the door, I'm already damned.
Selling hopelessness.
That's right.
Hopelessness 101, new class in the elementary school.
I love it.
That's just brutal. All right. A topic that I know, which we touched on earlier, but the whole defund the police thing. How do police officers, actual police officers out there, guys that you serve with, guys and gals you serve with, how do they react to that?
I think it's the dumbest thing ever. That's the that those are the words I hear all the time because it is it would never be able to fulfill itself completely, you know. And we see in New York, Mayor Bill de Blasio wants to give the money back, and of course Lori Lightfoot, because she's only doing it because the police department's turned their back on her, you know. But she wants to put the money back in the police department. Should have never left.
Yeah, it's really remarkable to see. And when you look at that from a, you mentioned right when we got going about getting out and getting to know people and being in the community from a community policing standpoint. What in a city like Chicago, from a law enforcement perspective, what would make a difference there? Obviously, Democrats in charge doesn't make a difference. Whether you have Rahm Emanuel or Lightfoot in charge hasn't made a difference. They have put a lot of money into the police department in the past, and that apparently didn't make a difference. So that's my question when we come back from the break, is from a law enforcement standpoint, what actually would make a difference in cities like Chicago or New York or Philadelphia, L.A., whatever you want to talk about? And is that just a matter of leadership? Like if we turn it over to a Republican, is it going to get better? So I want to talk about that when we come back with Antoine Thomas. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show, talking today to a good brother, Antoine Thomas. He's the host of Real Talk Podcast. You can look that up on Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. Real Talk with Antoine Thomas. He's also been working with Blexit, which has not been around a long time, like 2 years, 35 states already. So that's awesome. That's predominantly focused on African Americans that are, first of all, willing to have a conversation. Like, why do we keep voting Democrat? Why are we quote unquote liberal or Democrats by definition or by default? And so people are starting to wake up. And by the way, that's not just a thing that should happen on the left. That should happen on the right too. I always challenge. I started teaching again this week, Antoine, and it's great to have you in the studio. Cool. And I'm always telling students all the time, listen, especially if you're going to call yourself a Christian, you need to be a critical thinker and your ultimate allegiance is to the truth. Amen. It's not to the Republican Party. It's not to the Democrat Party. It's to the Lord.
That's right.
And it's to truth. And if you're doing that right, you're going to make enemies on both sides of the aisle because the truth's going to cut both sides. Now, from a biblical perspective, it's going to cut more easily on the left because they have a lot of positions that are just obviously anti-biblical. But if it's applied correctly, it's going to cut on the right as well. So as we engage, and with African Americans, I want the same opportunity I want with white Americans or Hispanic Americans. Let's just sit down, set the political preconceived notions down or off the table, and let's just talk about the issues. Is that starting to happen more, do you think? Because it was amazing with Donald Trump in the presidency. He got a bigger percentage of the black vote in 2020 than he did in 2016, and that was significant movement.
Right.
Is there some hope there? Are we starting to, at least some part of the culture, starting to be willing to have a conversation?
That's a good question. I hadn't seen the tides turn yet. Actually, I was grabbing lunch today, and I decided that I was going to wear my Make America Great hat again.
Uh-oh.
I got tons of them, and I put them away. I said, why am I putting this stuff away? Let's bring it back out. It's a great opportunity to bring it back out, too.
It's a moniker that should always apply.
Oh, yeah. The worker there actually told me, I love the hat, and we got into a conversation, of course, about what's going on in the world. But those are conversation starters, like you say. But coming up to someone randomly talking about it, not so much, Steve. I think right now the people on the left don't want to admit that they were wrong. Of course, I'm hearing people say, well, you know, my people that voted for Biden are saying, oh, we made a mistake. At the end of the day, not many are willing to admit that.
Yeah.
But we tried to tell them from day one.
Yeah. Got a little pride issue there.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of working, because you've been in the Fuquay Varina Police Department, Wake County Sheriff's Department, Johnston County, you work in the Johnston County area as well. But getting involved in elections.
Yeah.
A lot of there's plenty of Christians. I don't know many of them personally that are like Christians in politics. We shouldn't be involved with that. I know you have an interest in running, and I think that's a great idea. And clearly God, I think, is moving you in that direction.
Amen.
But also supporting people. An interesting one is Randolph.
Right.
So Randolph Beatty, who's running for sheriff of Wake County, which a lot of people would probably be surprised because Randolph's a Democrat, right?
He is a Democrat.
So now we just lost everybody. Now they're just confused.
That's right.
So what do we do about stuff like this? Like what? Like there's Antoine.
That's right.
Hardcore MAGA hat wearing Republican. And then there's Randolph, who's not.
That's right.
But you're both law enforcement guys. So how does that work?
Well, that's half the battle right there. You know, we're running for a seat that is law enforcement, totally related. But then you look at Randolph Beatty, why I had some of my conservative friends to say why. And I give them a list of things. But what I talk about is that he's not a leftist. Now, we always have a conversation, him and I said, man, I just wish that your party wouldn't say defund the police. We can get more of my Republican friends on board. But we say this, vote the person, not the party.
Yeah.
And being in law enforcement is one that we can actually – I wish it was nonpartisan, but because it's not. But he's also held to accountability because you have this brother who's on the right side who thinks that, you know, some of the things that we deal with in politics shouldn't be. But the good thing is we're there to enforce the law, which yeah. made it easier for me to come on the side of that. And again, the whole campaign staff are the capital D. I'm the only Republican. And
wow.
we joke around all the time, but I hold the line and I hold them responsible. They hold me responsible, whatever you sure. want to call it. But at the end of the day, he is the best candidate. We have known each other for years. And I just believe, again, I talked about a calling. I believe God's given him the opportunity. And then I'll have some influence to help him push yeah. what we need to push forward.
Yeah. And the challenge there is getting people to look at the man as opposed to the letter next to their word.
That's it.
The letter next to the word isn't irrelevant. But in the case of a sheriff's position, the reason I love sheriffs is because they're elected.
That's right.
So we actually get to have something to do with that, which is super important. But how much is politics a part of how policing actually gets done?
It's a huge part. And we see it more than ever now. It is one of the I don't think you can ever turn on a TV without seeing something about the police, whether good or bad.
Sure.
We are in politics, whether people like to. That's one thing I tell Randy. Randy always says that. He says, I'm not a politician. I said, however, you have become one.
Yeah.
Because you've gotten into running for the sheriff. And so the policies that he wants to implement that the sheriff's office never seen before, one is creating a human trafficking task force countywide to bring police officers aboard to combat trafficking. We're eighth in the nation as North Carolina's concerned.
Wow.
So wants to fix that issue. Of course, the great Sheriff Dunning, who I love and still respect, he started the Citizens Well Check program. That has to be brought back because there's people who can't reach their mothers
yeah.
and fathers, and,
yep.
and that's just a thing that people are very concerned about. So a lot of good things on the horizon when you look at a Citizens Academy to give that thought maybe to most of the black, we don't know, on both sides though, to allow them to come in and actually see what we do on a day-to-day basis.
That's super important.
Oh, yeah.
Because I've seen some very liberal anti-police commentators, people on YouTube, whatever, where all of a sudden they'll come in and the police will put them through live action training.
Mm-hmm.
Say, all right, we're going to put you in this situation.
We'll
see what you think when things are developing and you're making decisions at a quarter-second interval.
Sorry.
And all of a sudden, you see them get humbled.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, this is not exactly what I thought it was. I can see how these problems can occur, that they really have nothing to do with this police officer's perception of somebody of a different color, but that's just these situations are so difficult.
Oh yeah,
which is why I think the stress level, the divorce level, suicide level, all the problems, not just in the police, but the fire, first responders, military. We owe you guys and gals a much bigger debt of gratitude than I think we normally pay, and certainly our prayers. But inside, I want to go back to that question about politics. When guys and gals are out on the street, when you're operating in a police environment, Wake County, Johnston County, whatever, I don't care. The police officers, when they're in it, when you're doing the job, does it matter whether the other person in the squad car is a Democrat or Republican?
At the end of the day,
you're just all police officers.
We're all police officers. As a matter of fact, take it a step further. It don't matter the person that's calling.
Yeah.
Democrat or Republican. We're coming because that's our job. That's what we swore to. And that we're not coming in to ask that question. You know, did you vote for Trump or Biden? You know, that'll determine what type of help I give you. But you hit it on the nail, Steve.
Man.
But it's in law enforcement is in politics very heavy, or politics are in law enforcement.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but because law enforcement, I think, is to a certain extent, kind of a pawn or a playing piece.
That's right.
Of politics. How do most police officers view politicians?
Don't trust them. But, you know, even when you look at the chief can only make the rules within the policies within that police department, but he's still held to the council, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that's where a lot of the issues we run into. To go back to your question from earlier, if you have a conservative council, the chief is able to get more things done, he or she, and you get the ball moving, or like they say, the pen, you know, moving around.
Yeah.
A bit. But at the end of the day, if you have a liberal council, then you know, if we can just say this, your profession is kind of dimmed or demolished, say, right?
What should we do, for me being a common citizen, you being a police officer, what can we do to help you?
Buy us lunch and breakfast. No, I'm kidding. When you look,
I don't think that's funny. I think we should do that, right? Didn't you get double dipped at the end of those days? A couple people buy?
I did.
That matters, doesn't it?
That does matter. It means a lot. No, but on a serious note, just spreading the word and standing up for us. What I found out being one thing I left out, I've served on the Police Benevolence Association for years. That's how I got involved in politics.
Really. Wow. Okay.
Going to those screenings and sitting down with the politicians in the room, whether they're running or already ran and just trying to hold their seat, listening to them talk. But at the end of the day, holding us accountable, of course, because we need to be held accountable. I'm not saying we're perfect, but at the end of the day, you know, defend us when we're right.
Yeah.
And, you know, when it's time for some persecution, when we're wrong, we'll take it all and strive to get better. But always say reach one, teach one. And what I mean by that is just make sure that you're not spreading false narratives about all cops are pigs and whatever you want to call us, racist, because at the end of the day, we leave our homes to protect you, not willing or knowing if we will make it back.
Yeah, and that's such a huge – I think we need to go back 20 years to 9/11. We're about to celebrate the 20th anniversary. I'll actually be in Manhattan for that.
Oh, wow.
And there was a newfound respect. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was something we had before, but on the heels of 9/11, to your point – where police officers and fire and first responders and EMS and EMT are going in when everybody else is running out. And that lasted for a while. The effects of 9/11 were beautiful, but short-lived. And I think we need to be at that point now where we really understand, setting aside our politics, what a value police officers are in this country and are so needed and worthy of defending. And so I think that's a great point that you made, that we need to make sure we're not spreading a false narrative. And I'll ask people every once in a while, Antoine, and go, okay, what percentage of the police officers nationwide do you think actually probably shouldn't have a job tomorrow? And some people go really high and say 25%. I think that's ridiculous. Some people go low, say 1%, which I think is bad. And I'll say, okay, let's say it's 5%.
Okay.
There's 750,000 police officers nationwide. Mm-hmm. That's about 37,000.
Mm-hmm.
And that's real. But 95% are doing a good job.
Right.
And we need to support you and pray for you and encourage you. Host of Real Talk Podcast, Antoine Thomas, Real Talk. I put the link up on Facebook Live. You can get it on Apple Podcasts and check that out. He just started that, as well as his work with Blexit and as a police officer. Antoine, God bless you, brother. Thanks
for coming
in. God
bless you. I enjoyed it.
All right, man. We'll do it again.
Yes, sir.
Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Good to be with you. Wanted to tell you about, for all my friends here in North Carolina and Virginia and this area in general, just an awesome opportunity coming up on Saturday, August 28th, up at the home of Liberty University in Lynchburg, Virginia. We're going to talk about that conference. We're also going to talk about the organization that my new friend Travis Witt is with. That's an associated part of Liberty University. That is a subject that's near and dear to my heart. I know it is for most of you folks. That's the Standing for Freedom Center at Liberty University. And so it's great to have Travis Witt. Welcome to the show for the first time, brother. Appreciate that. How are you?
Oh, my. What a great privilege to be on the show talking with you, sir. I'm doing well, thank you.
Excellent. So let's start with the Standing for Freedom Center and everything that's going on at Liberty, and then that'll take us into the conference coming up a week from Saturday. That's going to be on Saturday, August 28th.
That's correct. Certainly, Liberty is seeing record growth. Our numbers are up this year. The number of individuals who are returning this year is higher than it has been for many years. Our online students are numbering well over 100,000, and that's up another 7,000. It's just an amazing situation of what we're seeing at Liberty. And of course, we know we're going through the trials and the tribulations of some shifting.
Sure.
And I think in the long run, the shift is going to bring Liberty back to a place where it looks more like Jerry Falwell Sr. wanted it to look like than what it has transpired. I believe that Standing for Freedom is going to be a great avenue for that to occur, because we're working with social media and ambassadors and really focusing in on the younger generation to understand a true biblical worldview. My responsibility, Steve, is to work with pastors and to encourage pastors to reclaim the cultural vacuum that we have left simply because we've chosen not to be addressing salt and light. And if we're called to be salt of the earth and light of the world, what part of culture are we not supposed to be touching?
Right.
And when you touch the young people and the pastors, the hope is we'll be able to have the opportunity to create and have great relationships with legislators who are making decisions on behalf of us or against us. And we want to have the right individuals serving us in all forms of government, local, state, and national forms of government. So that's kind of where we are.
Yeah, and the Standing for Freedom Center at Liberty, the website is standingforfreedom.com, which is an excellent resource center for you. Go through the interviews, look at the articles. There's a lot there. There's a lot of tabs to follow. There's a lot of information in breaking news. It's really been effective and a great blessing. Advancing life, liberty, and truth for the next generation. That's standingforfreedom.com. And I appreciate the way you're talking about Liberty, and I wish more people would get to know Jerry Falwell Sr. Because it was an amazing man, and he had a huge impact on the country. His vision for education in America was transformative on the Christian side. But this was also a guy that befriended some people that most Christians wouldn't bother talking to. I mean, he was good friends with, what was the guy that was the founder of Penthouse and Hustler magazine? I'm trying to remember the guy's name.
Yeah, Larry Flint. He was friends of, he had Ted Kennedy show up and talk to the students. He had, who else? Jesse Jackson was one who would come in and preach and teach. And Jesse, Jerry had to say, not again, because Jerry was really hoping that he believed that the only way to heaven was through the blood and the sacrifice of Jesus Christ. And
of course,
that was not where Jesse was at the time. And so Jerry said, I thought we had at least one thing we agreed upon.
he had wonderful sense
with so many people.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, wonderful sense of humor, very winsome Christian witness. And he was a great example, especially later in his life, of this mix that we find in John chapter 1, verse 14, of Jesus being full of both grace and truth. I talk about that regularly on the air, Travis, and it's something I continue to pursue myself. But Jerry never gave an inch on the truth. But he had increasing measures of grace and this winsomeness that was just amazing. And I'm excited and believe that God's going to kind of bring that tone back to Liberty, because there's so much that the Lord has already done there and some bumps in the road recently, obviously, but excited for that. Tell us about the Stand Conference, because this is something I've known about this for a little while. Tony Perkins at the Family Research Council, I've done stuff with those guys before, but this is really calling out men specifically. It's a week from this Saturday, August 28th in Lynchburg. Tell us about that.
Well, real quickly, that's an event that we've been looking at for months to have, as Tony Perkins and General Jerry Boykin, Larry Jackson, Charles Flowers, others will be coming to the Lynchburg for a men's conference, Stand Courageous. But we really believe that a man stands courageous. And, what does a courageous man look like when the University of Texas Austin calls anybody that has some masculine features toxic? And we don't know what that looks like, but when God shows up and teaches men to be a man that is a provider, and the essence of provider is somebody that says, when I'm a man and I give my presence to my family, I am providing my presence, which is not necessarily just funds. It's about being there as the man, the instructor, the defender, the battle buddy, and the chaplain. So we have a full day at Liberty University from 7:45 and about 5:30, two major issues that we're going to focus on. We're going to see men come to know Jesus Christ, because the numbers of men that come forward at an altar call right before lunch are fairly large, and is as many as 10% of the men in former events have come forward. And then right at the very end, Steve, we're going to be doing something called the Father's Blessing. And literally, that was Jesus. Jesus heard the Father's blessing when he was baptized. Jesus hears, heaven is opened, all those around said, this is my beloved Son, in whom I'm well pleased. Listen to him. Purpose, design, and influence. So the reality is God blessed Jesus with the blessings of the Father, and we believe that's one of the things that's missing now with men, because men need to know who they are, where they stand, and what their purpose is. And we believe that a part of the Stand Courageous Men's Conference will give them that. And they leave with a purposeful design that says, oh, yeah, I've got to go find somebody else that I can walk this journey with. So one becomes two becomes four, Bible studies break out, two-year read through the Bible, monthly phone calls with General Boykin and others to just stay on track with what's going on.
Yeah, it's and right now in this country, you know, we're so kind of consumed with PC, the toxic masculinity. There's so much division, both inside and outside the church. Travis and I were talking about that challenge earlier today on a phone call. But there's a lot of men that I think, unfortunately, just really don't know their place. They don't know, how should I engage? How much should I be involved in political things? How much should I be involved in speaking into the culture? How do I even impart the faith to my children? How do I engage my family? And there's a lot on us biblically, but God provides for all of that. But I think a lot of guys today, Travis, everybody's kind of gun shy, or way too many people are gun shy in terms of engagement, because we see what happens when we step up to the plate. But God never promised us a rose garden. He always told us in this life you're going to have trouble, and I think we have to kind of stand up to that. So I appreciate the Stand Conference, the men's conference, because men more now than any time in my lifetime, we need to understand what it means to be a biblical man.
I couldn't agree anymore, Steve, because ultimately what we are seeing is men, because they're afraid of controversy and conflict in many instances, because we've been told to respect people. But if we are afraid of conflict, then what we do is we self-censure. And when we self-censure, we are silent, and silence is not courageous. Not in this realm, because what happens is you will find when you stand that there are probably 100 men who want to stand behind you.
That's right.
But one person has to step up and stand. And so, unfortunately, what we're seeing in Virginia right now is so much of the battle that we have with LGBTQ, our school board, those kind of things, that those discussions are being led by women. And in reality, they need to be led by the men of the families, in addition to the women, to stand up and say, right, we're not going to take this, we're going to draw a line in the sand, and we're not backing up.
Yeah, because when you watch these videos of people showing up outside of a school board meeting or inside of a school board meeting, the vast majority of them are women. Now, I understand the numbers when it comes to a daytime thing, but at nighttime, there's no excuse for men not to be there, and I appreciate the way you said that. We both need to be there. Men and women of God need to be showing up at these things. And whether you have kids in the school system or not, when Jesus says, love your neighbor as yourself, that pretty much covers everything. So there's really no excuse there. But like, I never expected, as a North Carolina resident living in Raleigh, that I would know anything about Loudoun County, Virginia. But Loudoun County is, to your point, is a perfect example of all the things that have gone wrong with school boards. And men need to step up to that plate along with their wives.
Absolutely. And you know, it gets uglier. I think they had a meeting up there last week where they wouldn't let anybody inside the school building. And, of course, the school building's paid for by taxes. And a thunderstorm shows up, and they wouldn't let them in there to get out of the rain. They wouldn't let them in there to go to the bathroom. And then they vote totally against the wishes of the people. And you can understand why people are getting frustrated. But mama bears need the help of papa bears. And so papa bears need to come to the rescue as well and stand up and say, kind of like a song back in my older days, by Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, I'm not going to back down, I'm going to stand my ground.
Yeah, it's a great song. I was actually going through the lyrics of that song not that long ago thinking, I should probably use this on the air. So great minds think alike. How can people get more information and get registered? Because it's coming up on Saturday, August 28th, there in Lynchburg. Beautiful, unbelievable campus for Liberty University from 7:45 in the morning to 5:30 p.m. But how do people get registered?
Absolutely. Thank you. Go to standcourageous.com and click on events. It will take you to a link of at Liberty University. Click on that link, fill out that form and get signed up and get registered and join us at Liberty University, a beautiful campus and a great program on Saturday, August the 28th.
Awesome. StandCourageous.com. Travis Witt, thank you, my brother. Thank you so much. We look forward to having you on again.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, pal. We'll talk again. God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon. And like my dad always used to say, ever forward.
Another program powered by the Truth Network.